Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. Tribal courts handle cases in a way that works best for specific tribal communities. They're also a key component of sovereignty. Next Monday, PBS is premiering a documentary following the Quitzan and Yurok courts and all the triumphs, setbacks, and personal struggles of tribal justice. Today we'll talk with the two judges featured in the film about what the legal system looks like for their tribes. Stay tuned for this conversation as we go live right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native American lawmakers in Montana are calling for the removal of a memorial to Confederate soldiers in the state's capital city. Nikki Ouellette of Montana Public Radio reports.
The granite fountain in Helena's Hill Park has been the subject of debate in recent years as other cities across the country decide the fate of monuments erected to honor the legacy of the Confederacy. Representative Shane Morgeau, a Missoula Democrat, was one of eight members of the Native American Legislative Caucus to sign a letter Tuesday addressed to Helena city and state officials asking for the fountain to be removed following weekend violence and a death at a white nationalist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia.
You know, obviously, for us to take a look at, you know, ourselves, take a look at Montana and kind of revisit some of the things that, you know, we have ongoing in our own state.
The letter says such monuments have, quote, stood for segregation, secession, and slavery, end quote, and asks city and state officials to recognize the, quote, harmful message that this fountain sends to Indians, minorities, and all Montanans. Governor Steve Bullock says the statue is a city issue, not a state one.
Whether it's ripped out and put in a museum or left with a sign clearly explaining how and why that fountain was erected a century ago, what's important is that in 2017, it's clear that we as Montanans do not glorify some of the darkest chapters of our past or tolerate the hate and racism that a small fringe of our society continues to spew.
City officials have said previously they did not plan to remove the memorial, which was donated to the city in 1916 by the United Daughters of the Confederacy, a Virginia-based group of women descended from Confederate soldiers who are dedicated to preserving Confederate history. City officials decided instead in 2015 to add an interpretive sign to contextualize the monument's history, but that sign has not yet been installed. The fountain is the only Confederate monument in the Northwest United States. For National Native News, I'm Nikki Ouellette.
The families of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls are demanding a reset of Canada's commission, which is leading a national investigation. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
Ottawa has resisted efforts so far to retool the inquiry, despite repeated calls from the families and the resignations of one of the commissioners as well as key staff members. Recently, the largest Native group in Canada, the Assembly of First Nations, rejected a call for the Prime Minister to replace the lead commissioner, but did urge some kind of a hard reset. Now the families of the victims say they want that hard reset. In an open letter to Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, more than 140 of them say they want the resignations of the commissioners, but they also want their concerns about the inquiry's process addressed. Josie Nipinak of the Awatan Healing Lodge in Alberta is one of those who signed the letter.
What we're seeing at this moment is a very colonial construct that is very legal. And those are some of the systems that had previously or continue in some ways to dismiss Indigenous women's lives and to perpetuate colonial violence against Indigenous women. So those systems are very difficult to trust as well.
Nipinak says the process cannot be done without the families of missing and murdered loved ones and without the Native cultures and ceremonies across the country. A spokesman for the Minister of Indigenous Affairs says Ottawa is committed to ending the tragedy of missing and murdered Indigenous women, and families must be at the center of the Commission's work. The commissioners say they have a plan and are dedicated to finding the solutions needed. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitor planning services to Native American conventions in Albuquerque. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org. Support by BNSF Railway, proud partners of the American Indian Science and Education Society's National Conference, September 21st to 23rd, helping prepare the next generation of STEM leaders. More at bnsf.com/tribal relations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. On August 21st, a documentary called Tribal Justice will premiere on many local PBS stations. The story follows two California tribal court judges inside and outside of their courtrooms. Here is Gwitsan Chief Judge Claudette White talking about her role as judge and speaking with a family in her courtroom.
A lot of the tribal courts in California are really in their infancy stages.
Okay.
I was actually the first tribal member to serve in the capacity as our chief judge here on the reservation. That's the decision I'm going to make today, is whether or not we're going to allow your aunt and uncle to continue to care for you. Because if you don't do your part and you start acting out, not going to school, or you run away, you compromise the guardianship. That means I have to terminate it. That means you go back into state care. And that changes everything for you. Yeah. Takes you off the reservation. And we don't want to do that. You interested in singing? I know you guys used to sing.
Yeah, me and my brother, well, my brother still sings, but I don't know, I kind of drifted from it. I don't know why or how, but it just kind of got away from me, but I'd be interested, yeah.
Well, we'll let you know when we're getting together for practice, and maybe you can get together with the guys, because that always brings you strength.
Yeah.
Might help keep you grounded here. You guys could be leaders in our community. Or you could help destroy our community. In the tribal court process, we focus on restoration. We focus on trying to put families back together and give them what they need to help make them whole. I believe in an Indian country, when you're trying to restore something, you're not looking at just restoring a victim or even a defendant. You're looking at restoring the community. You're looking at restoring the tribe.
And today we'll talk with Judge White, as well as another judge featured in the documentary coming to you on PBS stations, Tribal Justice. And we'll also speak with the filmmaker about why she chose to dive into the work of tribal court judges. And with all of that, there's room for you. What role does your tribal court serve in your tribal nation? Give us a call and share your experience. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And right now, we're going to go to Winter Haven, California, to say hello to Claudette White. She is the chief judge of the Quitsan Tribal Court, and she is an enrolled member of the Quitsan Tribe, and she is also Kokopa and Kumeyaay descent. It's our pleasure to welcome Judge White to the hour. Judge White, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And Judge White, I think we shared some very strong words that you shared in the documentary, which really takes us close to what you see on a daily basis, not only when you're in your courtroom, but when you walk out those doors and walk among your community. And those words, you're looking at restoring the community, you're looking at restoring the tribe. When you are doing this kind of work, I'd like you to expand on that and why this is important when you're taking a look at tribal justice in our tribal communities.
In terms of trying to look at restoration of the community. You know, any person we have participating in the court's process really affects not just themselves, but their families, and then beyond that, our entire community. And so the goal, especially dealing with cases involving children or cases involving criminal matters, we want to be less punitive in terms of meaning punishment. We want to try to offer services and things that might be culturally appropriate to allow the families or individuals to really look at how they're living, what they're doing, and what might be causing some of those problems, and try to help give them the opportunity to put themselves in a different and better position, whether that's to parent or to reunify with their families, or whether that's to change, you know, themselves and then the course of their life. And so, you know, anybody we have, it's not just about warehousing them and putting them in jail and finding ways to punish them. In some instances, you know, some of the alternative methods we look at to try to treat or help somebody aren't effective, and that may have to happen. But our first goal is looking at, you know, how can we help you to live better? We're not trying to hurt you. We're not trying to punish you. You know, they're members, and they live in our community in almost every instance. And so really the goal is to give them the skills and opportunities they need, you know, to live successfully and healthy in our community.
And Claudette, in the film, you also say, you know, when you're talking to an individual and thinking about this, that people could either be leaders or help destroy the community. And I think, you know, hearing something like that coming from a tribal judge or just a judge at that, I think it really opens up of seeing, you know, the care for the community. And is this something you're proud of?
Yes, it's something I'm very proud of. I'm vested in my community. I happen to be, you know, a tribal member residing right here on reservation and have for a majority of my life. I've only left the reservation for periods of receiving my education, then I've returned home, and I've really had the privilege and honor to serve my people. And so when I deal with people in tribal court, you know, majority of them are tribal members or tribal family, you know, I'm vested in them just as much as they're vested in me. Like, we all help make up our community. We reside here. We live amongst each other. And some of the processes, and in the film, just the piece that you aired here with the dialogue, in other courts that might be deemed or seem like, oh, that's inappropriate, or maybe that kind of discussion shouldn't happen, or invitation. But the dialogue that was aired here involved a young person. He was a teenager in guardianship, and that individual I had talked to, when I was speaking to him, I was trying to encourage him and remind him of how I've seen them live. He and his brother at the time were having some problems due to health issues involving his family, and they were doing excellent, excelling in school. When I would go to the school for different events, I'd see them receive awards, and they were doing well. But at that point, they were having some real challenges in terms of, you know, staying out of the juvenile system in state court. And we wanted to preserve the guardianship, and I had discussed with him whether or not, when I was asking him about singing, I was talking about traditional singing. I had seen them participate in the past and them steer away from that, and I had was basically telling him, if he wanted to get back to that, that they, you know, I would invite them to my home to come sing. In any other jurisdiction, that probably would be taboo and not something that would be considered appropriate. But based on the nature of our people and what we value, I found that to be appropriate without, you know, trying to really limit what we do in court, but trying to include them in some of the things that are occurring in our community. And I took the opportunity to ask him and then to share with him, you know, really to let him know that, you know, as a individual, he could do one of those things. He could be a leader and help our people, or either he could help destroy our community. And sometimes some of the people that appear before us maybe aren't hearing that outside of the court. And I wanted to take that opportunity because I'm vested in my people and care about them, and I wanted to share that with him.
Very nice. Judge White, we appreciate you sharing with us today. And folks, what about you? What about in your own tribal community? Do tribal values come forward through the tribal justice system? is it centered on community? Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Maybe there is restorative justice going on in your community, taking a different approach at how a community sees things. Tell us a little bit about it. We're curious, and there's room for you to share. 1-800-996-2848. And Judge White, we're going to welcome in now another voice coming to us from Klamath, California. We have Abby Abenati, and she is the chief judge of the Yurok tribe. She's also Yurok, and it's our pleasure to welcome her to the hour. Judge Abby, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And Judge Abby, give us a little bit of a view as to how in your community justice is viewed. And we heard very well from Judge White about community being a center and thinking about how people connect. Tell us a little bit about your community and the tribal justice system.
Well, we really tried to create a modern judicial system that reflects our traditional values. And so what you're looking at is developing practices that hook into those values. We're a village culture, so we basically resolve problems in village. And that's essentially what we try to do in our court system, is resolve whatever problems a person is having. And it doesn't mean that there are no consequences for bad behavior, because there are. But those consequences are designed to lead you back into community. And sometimes they're working on your own issues. Sometimes they're making something right by going, I'm sorry, and here's what I'm going to do to show you that I'm sorry. It really depends on what the incident is. But the pressure of the situation is to make it right. You know, we have responsibilities to each other and for each other, and we have to exercise those. And part of what we do in the judicial system is essentially assist people to do that. You know, we're not judging people so much as helping people do right behavior.
And Judge Abby, in the documentary Tribal Justice, it's revealed that you know your way around the courts, not only there in your community, but also in state court. And in state court, there's a different view. You say it in the film. In state court, if you know somebody, maybe you're not going to be that person who's hearing the case. But in the community, that's kind of every case. And tell me a little bit about that side of stuff.
Well, I think, you know, we've been taught in this country that justice looks like this, meaning the state and federal system. No, that is a form of justice. It isn't the default position. It isn't the definition. And I think it's really important for the state and federal and those who use it to look at it and say, maybe this isn't really working for us right now. For us, in a tribal setting, it really isn't working, and it doesn't work. And it wasn't what we were used to, nor was it effective. We had disputes before the time of the invasion and all the problems that came with it, and we had a way of resolving them. You know, the problems are different, so the practices must be different, but the values are the same, and that's what we're trying to do.
And I was really moved by your words in the documentary where you said, you know, at a time before, the last thing people would do is call on a bunch of strangers to settle disputes or to make decisions. Expand on that and share that, please.
I think, you know, I'm invested, and the people who come in here are invested in each other and in the community. We see each other all day, every day. It's exactly what Judge White said. You know, we live in our communities, and they're small enough so that we interact with each other. So that it's very important how we interact, and it makes a huge difference.
All right. Thank you for that. And folks, I want to remind you, our phone lines are open. If you'd like to share, give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We are focusing on the Quitzon Nation. Also on the line with us, we have Judge Abby taking us to California and her area. If there's anything you'd like to share, maybe we also have some other justices, tribal justices in our listening audience today. you can share a view of what you face and some of the celebrations, maybe even challenges or even hurdles that you are proud to say your court has overcome. Call us right now. We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And if all of this sounds simply like a dream and you wish some of this was in place in your own community, talk about that too. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And with that, Judge Abby, do you ever hear of criticism of tribal court, of hearing some of this and saying that's coddling or that would never happen in my court? And how do you balance things or just an outside understanding of the uniqueness of tribal courts, but still being courts that, you know, bring forward justice? Tell me more, Judge Abby.
Well, I think, you know, people can have those kinds of criticisms. And I think, you know, if people speak a criticism, I usually respond to whatever they say. I don't believe it's coddling. I believe the purpose of justice is to create consequences and to ensure right behavior. And that's what we try to do, you know, and we're pretty successful at it. And I think that's what you have to, in the end, look at, is our degree of success. That it's a lot more intensive per case in the sense of how much time I might spend on a case. But I believe that our results prove out that this is a good approach. It works in our community. We have people who, you know, some people may say, okay, well, you're working with somebody in wellness and they went to rehab and it didn't work for them, so they don't get another chance. And I'll say, well, I'm fine with giving them another chance. You know, and they'll say, no, you know, they shouldn't get another chance. But, you know, it's very interesting to me that there doesn't seem to be the same pressure on a system that imprisons people over and over and over and gets no success. You know, but they're willing to look at a wellness court and say, well, you had your one chance at rehab and you didn't make it, so therefore you don't get a second. But we don't care if we incarcerate you a half a dozen times and still don't get the change. You know, I'm really interested in change behavior.
Thank you for that, Judge Abby. And Judge White, I also want to get your take on that. But folks, if you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Are you surprised to hear this kind of conversation connected to tribal justice, tribal courts? Tell us about it. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Judge White, is there anything you'd like to add?
Yes, sometimes I see criticism come from probably state providers or the state system in terms of having concerns of maybe transferring a case that might be a dependency in nature to tribal courts, unsure of what might happen in tribal court, and thinking that, you know, maybe a reunification that's inappropriate, or at least in their views, inappropriate might occur. And we've had, you know, literally situations where we almost bump heads, literally feeling like it, at least at times with the state systems. And like I said, the providers and agencies, because of some resistance in, at different times for transferring cases to tribal courts. And my view on that and my position on that matter is that it's in the best interest for tribal children to be in tribal court as opposed to state court, if it's at all possible and we're able to meet the services and needs of those families. And part of the resistance is just lack of understanding of what happens in tribal court. Just because standards might be different, it does not mean that they are lesser. And so part of my hope in participating in this film, Tribal Justice, is so that the broader public, including the state courts and even maybe the federal process, would understand and see a little bit of about what happens and get a glimpse into what tribal courts are doing and the type of work that they're doing. I see a lot of really successful cases come out in different tribal courts, and, you know, I'm always looking to other tribal courts to learn about what they're doing, what they're implementing, where they might find success, and, you know, to see if those things might work in my own community. And, you know, criticism is hard to deal with sometimes, but, you know, tribes and tribal courts along with tribal leaders need to stand our ground when we find it is appropriate to bring children back into our community, back onto the reservation and with tribal families to fight for those issues and those circumstances and in those cases. And so I think a lot of what happens is just a lack of understanding. And
because, you know, we have many of our own service providers on our own reservation in our own community, we find sometimes greater success instead of trying to deal with off-reservation service providers who are sometimes further distances away from our community and our reservation with transportation issues and a number of other things. And so that's where I think I see a bulk of the criticism come from, is from lack of understanding. And I try to take the time to educate and to share information with other individuals, and I'm hoping this film does that and helps give more stability and credibility and respect to tribal courts throughout the country.
All right, thank you for that. And Judge White, in the documentary, it shows you facing exactly what you explained head on. And, you know, we follow a story of a mother, a father, their family, and a son who was put in the state system, and the struggle to bring it into tribal court. And, you know, there's some good that comes out of this. And anything you want to share about that? We got about a minute before break.
Sure. With regards to that case that we were able to bring back into the tribal structure, that case originally happened due to the needs of the minor. It wasn't necessarily due to the inability of the parent to parent. And so I was really thankful that we were able to bring that case back to tribal court. Family was reunified, and the family has found much success, and we were able to balance services between both the state and county and the tribe. And so I was really thankful to see their participation. I think it gave an excellent example about what could happen to benefit those individual members and families.
And I think that that goes even deeper in this documentary of seeing through another story, somebody who is personally connected to you, of what happens when they are put in the system, and taking a long look at some of those effects. Judge White, we'll have you share more about that after the break. We'll also meet the filmmaker and hear a little bit why she felt a spotlight on all of this was necessary. As we continue, we also want to hear from you. If there's anything you want to share, or maybe you are learning more about the tribal justice system, tribal courts, and you are hearing a side that you didn't know existed, you can give us a call. Tell us about it. You can ask questions to our guests. We appreciate all that you bring to the hour. And we are taking a look at the documentary Tribal Justice. If you just tuned in, we're going to hear more from both justices out of their tribal nations. We're going very north in California. We're going very southern in California to hear about how tribes are shaping the courts for their community. And folks, we look forward to adding your voice to our conversation. And if there's anything you'd like to say about the court system in your community, what would you like to share? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. What does it mean to you? And maybe how has it affected your life? What about the side of restorative justice? Any thoughts on that? Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Or maybe you simply want to compare state and tribal court. Our phone lines are open. When children go missing in the United States, often the response is quick and efforts may cross multiple jurisdictions. In our Native nations, it's different. Amber Alert systems are not always in place, and law enforcement entities aren't always in sync. On the next Native America Calling, we'll take this discussion on. We hope you'll join us.
Thank you. Support by AARP. At AARP, we create and connect you to unique tools and programs, help you save money, and tackle the issues that matter most to you, your family, and your community. What we do might surprise you, like sponsoring the Native American Journalist Association National Conference in Anaheim, California, September 7th through the 9th. Information at aarp.org. Support by nonprofit community lender Acción, providing small business loans to help strengthen local economies of New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado, Nevada, and Texas. Acción works with entrepreneurs growing or just getting started with an easy application process and personalized one-on-one support. 9% interest loans available through the end of August. More at us.accion.org or by calling 800-508-7624.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Meseta Pueblo, and we appreciate you being tuned in, and we're honored you choose to spend a little bit of your day with us. And did you know you can add your comments directly to our website? Just visit NativeAmericaCalling.com and click on a show. Fill out the box that says leave a reply. And also want to take a moment to congratulate all of the folks who receive recognition from the Native American Journalists Association. More than 250 awards were given out. More than 700 entries came in. And the spotlight has been put on Native journalists and journalist organizations that cover Native people. And we just want to send our congratulations to all the folks who receive spotlight. And then also a congratulations to all of our media makers who every day show up to work, do their job, and bring you closer to stories, especially stories that reveal more about our tribal nations. And we also want to give kudos to our sister program, National Native News, and also Earth Songs for also receiving recognition. And a kudos to our own team here at Native America Calling for also being recognized. And thanks to Nacha for doing this. And folks, if there's anything more you want to share about that, you can always post online, on Facebook, on Twitter. And today we are talking about tribal courts. We've also been exploring the documentary Tribal Justice, and it will air on PBS stations on Monday, August 21st. You can look up your local listings to see times. And if there's anything you want to add to this conversation, the phone lines are open right now. Is there a tribal court in your tribe that you're thinking about as you hear this conversation? Does it take a restorative justice approach? Call us and share. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Also with us today on the line from Winter Haven, California, is Claudette White. She is a chief judge of the Quitsan Tribal Court. She's also an enrolled member of her nation, and she is also Kokopa and Kumeyaay descent. It's our pleasure to welcome her back to the hour. And from Klamath, California, is Abby Abenati, and she is a chief judge of the Yurok tribe. She's Yurok, and it's our pleasure to welcome her back into the conversation, too. And Judge White, before the break, I gave him a little preview of another storyline that's connected to you in the documentary Tribal Justice. Take us closer to that.
Okay. In the storyline you'll see featured in the film is something very personal and close to me. It was the cases involving a nephew of mine. And we didn't get the outcome we wanted in terms of ultimately what happened. But in any event, I thought his participation in the film showcasing kind of what he's gone through his life was very brave. And he was willing to participate in the film to hopefully give others the opportunity to learn from some of the things he's gone through and maybe to help other people. And it put, I think, really all of us, meaning our families, in a pretty vulnerable situation to kind of showcase personally what happened in his case. And early on, he was put into, I guess close to being a teenager, he was put into the state system. After reunifying with his mother, he had been in care with my mother, who ended up passing away back in 2003. And upon her passing, another sister of ours agreed to care for him. He was with her, and then his mom had been doing really well and wanted to reunify with himself, along with another sibling of his that was in care of my sister and myself during the time I was going to law school. And after having that opportunity, she unfortunately had a change in her circumstances in her life, and she lost himself and his siblings to the state care system. Majority of his other siblings went into the care of the father, but he and his brother stayed in the state system. His brother aged out, and my nephew, who is in the film and featured in the documentary, was in the care of the mother in the state system and then ended up back here on the reservation for a period of time. And the state just released the case without any real reason to do so. They had jurisdiction over the case, but went ahead and closed the case because they were living off reservation in a major city in Arizona. And when they closed the case, because there was no communication or no working with the tribe to either provide services or successful reunification and or even a successful transfer of that case, he just ended up basically roaming and out of school and ended up doing some things that he should not have been doing. And it was during, I think, the start of school, during the time of filming, when I had seen him walking on the road with his mother and they were going to go enroll him in school. I gave him a ride, and shortly thereafter, I think that evening, he asked if he could come over and visit, and I said, sure, no problem, picked him up, and then he just decided that he wanted to stay with me to have the opportunity to go to school, and Mom had agreed to allow that to happen. And then shortly after being in my care, we found out he had been in trouble and there were warrants out for his arrest. But subsequently, you see him going through the process of dealing with those issues in juvenile court in Arizona. Then you see an opening of a guardianship case in tribal court. We had limitations of being able to get services for him with the order we got from juvenile court, because it really didn't address the dependency. It only addressed the juvenile delinquency issues and placed him in and identified me as a guardian, but really didn't say much more beyond that. And so we went through the tribal process, but he was close to reaching the age of majority, and he actually reached the age of majority while in the tribal court system. And it was really unfortunate, like I'm saying, with regards to the outcome, because I think early on, had he had the opportunity, and maybe his family had the opportunity to come through the tribal court setting and the process right here in their own community, maybe circumstances might have been different. Sometimes logistics does play a part in having the tribal court take jurisdiction. I know in one instance, or in other instances, rather, it's not appropriate to transfer a case perhaps if individuals don't live anywhere near reservation and aren't on reservation. In some of those instances, our social service agencies can become involved and provide direct services or intervene and provide assurances and make recommendations even in the state system. And in this case, not much of that happened. And so I think we might have been able to see a different outcome for him had he been able to go through the tribal process as opposed to the state process. And a lot of what he explained to us about going through the state system, it sounded like a lot of like he was really institutionalized going through that system, and a number of group homes and placements that were unsuccessful, and it was just a lot about process and less about people, and very impersonal, at least from the experiences he explained, which were very negative. And subsequently, he ended up in prison, and he's in prison now and looking, I think, at a release date in November of this year. We're hoping if everything continues to go right, he's in good spirits and writes to me frequently and has shared that, you know, it's kind of been an eye-opener for him and hopefully a learning opportunity, and seems like he's committed to try to get his life back on track. So we're hopeful that that happens.
Well, we do appreciate your sharing, and I think there's a lot of learning from his story. And when you communicate with him, tell him a little bit about our appreciation, too, for sharing his story in this way. And then it's going to be out there in different communities. Judge Abby, I got to ask, when you hear of, you know, stories like this, or you see or you hear of people who have been through the state system, your tribal community members, do you ever think if they had gone through the tribal system, their life might have been way different? Go ahead.
Well, I think in that particular case, his life would have been different. And I think he's very lucky that he still has his family and that he will have, he's not done. And, you know, he has Judge White and his family, and they're going to stand behind him. And I have a lot of hope for him and a lot of belief in him. You know, he's strong and he can do this. And they're there to help him, and they're going to help him. And with, you know, with that, I'm hoping that although the movie's over, he's not done, you know, and I think that he's going to show us that, and I hope he does.
Thanks for sharing that. We're going to go to our phone lines. Maybe you have something to say. All you got to do is dial 1-800-996-2848. Let's say hello to Russ in Akiak, Alaska. Russ, thanks for calling in, and go ahead, add your voice.
Hello?
Hello, Russ. You're on air.
I just got a question. The North American Natives population is about 290,000, about that figure. And our the Native prisoners nationally, would you kind of give us a picture?
Sure. You know, it's definitely high numbers when we think about Native Americans who are incarcerated and thinking about this system. And Judge Abby, is there anything you can share about just, you know, what it looks like for Native Americans to go through this system in a big scope? Anything you want to add?
I don't really, I've never been really good with numbers and holding them in my head. We have a lot of people from home that do go to jail and who are in prisons. And we find when they come back that they have not been benefited from this experience. And what we're trying to do now is work with them as they're in there, before they go, when they're going, try to get them diverted and look at, you know, what happened and how can we help and how can we make this better for you and for your family. You know, and poverty is very crushing, and the opportunities and the options are dramatically reduced. We're concentrating a lot on reentry issues. If you go to jail or if you get convictions, then you're unemployable. How do we take care of that? How do we work with that? You know, how do we work with an education system that does not promote learning? How do we, you know, adjust our advocacy to the needs of our community? And how do we look at, okay, these are the gaps that we have as people right now, and this is how we have to address them. And that's what we spend a lot of time talking about and working on.
All right, thank you for that. And we got another caller. Russ, also thank you for your call there in Akiak. We're going to say hi to Wilson, who is calling today from Bethel, Alaska, tuned in on KYUK Radio. Wilson, thanks for calling. You're on air.
Yeah, good morning. This is Wilson Green calling from beautiful downtown Bethel.
Nice.
I have a thought when it comes to the justice system. It seems like, you know, we need to have developed a MOA, you know, memorandum of agreement with the court system and the tribal villages, the VPOs or whoever's in charge in the villages on people who are getting out of jail, having some kind of working relationship where if a report comes in on them violating any kind of conditions, that the memorandum agreement will allow them to have some say in what to do and how to do it. You know, there may be even orders from the court system upon release to work with the tribal organizations in their hometown to reenter their community and become a helper instead of, you know, by helping, I mean, you know, speak to young people on what they've experienced and maybe even be able to help them make better choices, you know.
Sure, you know, maybe even take it to the point where they become leaders in the community and in sharing their story. Wilson, thank you for your call. And Judge Abby, that's exactly what you talk about in the film. Any words for our caller, Wilson?
Well, Wilson, I totally agree with you. I think we have to really look at how we're going to bring our people home, what we can do to work with people. And I think if you wanted to work in Bethel and say, let's look at the number of people we have from Bethel incarcerated, where are they incarcerated, when are they getting out, how are we going to stay in contact with them, and when they come home, how are we going to transition them home? Where are they going to work? Where are they going to live? And what do they need, you know, to make them come back into harmony in community? Okay. And you're the best one to figure that out. I mean, I can't figure it out, but you could.
And I think throwing that out there, the uniqueness of what works for the community, I think is really important. And we appreciate you giving us a ring, too. Let's go ahead and meet the producer and director of Tribal Justice. She's joining us today from Salisbury, Connecticut. Let's go ahead and say hello to Anne Makepeace. Anne, thank you for joining us. Congratulations on putting together a great film. And anything you want to start us out with?
Well, just that it's wonderful to hear Abby's and Claudette's voices. I don't get to see them very much anymore because we're on different coasts. And just that it was a tremendous honor to be able to film with them, and that, you know, and a great gift that they gave to provide access to their courts and to them, their lives, and share those in the film. And I'm really happy with the way the film turned out. I think that the power of the film has a lot to do with the charisma and strength and dedication of Abby and Claudette and of the people who come before them. And so, you know, great to hear your voices and great to be on this show. The last time I was on the show was 5 years ago with my last film, We Still Live Here, so it's great to be back.
All right. Well, thanks for keeping them coming out. And what do you think most people don't know about tribal courts that you help reveal with this film?
I think most people don't know that, most people, non-Native people across the country, don't know that there are such things as tribal courts. I mean, when I interact with people and they ask me what the film's about and I tell them, they say, well, tribes have their own courts. So I think that's the first piece of important information that people get to think about, you know, oh, okay, Native nations have sovereignty, so therefore they have their own courts with jurisdiction over certain issues. And then, you know, as they watch the film, and I hope we'll get a really tremendous audience next Monday, August 21st, when it's broadcast on PBS, they'll see a totally different kind of justice from what they're used to seeing in mainstream courts, in state courts, and on television. They'll see a kind of justice where the judges actually engage with the people who come before them, a kind of court where the goal is not, okay, let's see, this is, they broke law, and I'm just making up these numbers, but, you know, they broke law 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, so therefore that mandates this X number of years in jail or prison. You know, it's not like that in tribal court. It's, okay, what happened? And, you know, the judges know probably three generations of the families of each person who comes into court, right? They know their parents, they know their grandparents, they know their kids. They have a whole context for understanding what happened with this person and why this person got in trouble. And therefore, they can mandate or sentence or demand results that are, or you know, I don't want to say punishments, but requirements that help the person and help if there's been a victim, you know, help resolve the relationship between the victim and the perpetrator and their families. And so, you know, there is a whole movement in mainstream courts, excuse me now, to change the criminal justice system because it's resulting in mass incarceration, which isn't helping anybody. And many courts, many state courts, are taking notice of what's going on in tribal courts. There's a court I visited in Red Hook, Brooklyn, which models their court on Native principles. It's called the Collaborative Court. There's a court in Cooks County, Illinois, that I just found out about that is implementing techniques or a judicial system that is based on that kind of restorative justice that we see in my film, Tribal Justice. So those are some of the things I think people can learn across the country. And I hope the film will inspire Native communities, you know, when they see these leaders and what they're doing. And I also hope it will inspire state court judges and law students and people, you know, involved in the criminal justice system to make a switch in what they're doing into a more humane way of implementing justice.
And maybe there's some of those folks who are tuned in right now who have looked to tribal courts. If you have, reach out to us. Tell us about it. You can send us an email, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And Anne, help us with the details on where people go to view or find out times and how they can connect with the film. Go ahead, Anne.
Right. Well, the largest reach that the film will have will, again, be next Monday, August 21st. You can remember it because it's the same day as the eclipse, on PBS. And so you just have to check your local listings. You can go to pbs.org to check what time Tribal Justice will be on your local PBS station. It's sometimes airs at 10 and 11 at night, and that, if that's too late, you can always record it, or it will be streaming for free at pbs.org. Or POV.org, that's the series that's showing it, for 30 days after the broadcast. So that's a great way to see it. You can get lots of information and ways to order the DVD when it becomes available on my website. And my website is www.makepeaceproductions.com. If you just Google Tribal Justice and my last name, which is Make Peace, you can find it that way, too. So there are lots of ways, and it will be available for use in schools and law schools, communities. And POV also is doing a lot of outreach screenings. So if you go to POV.org, POV stands for Points of View, POV.org, that's the series, the great series that is broadcasting the film on PBS. You can request the loan of a DVD for a free community screening, and POV has also created a wonderful discussion guide that they're just putting up online today, I believe, and lesson plans. So there are lots of ways you can see the film, use the film, and connect with it. So again, my website, makepeaceproductions.com.
Thanks for that, Anne. And folks, we're going to be wrapping up the hour here. Judge White, is there anything you want people to know about this experience, having your life on film, or even just giving people a clear view as to what is all connected to tribal courts? Judge White.
Well, first off, I'd like to thank my tribal community and the participants from my community that did participate. I just want viewers to know that in no way was it to cast anybody in a negative light or to make anybody look at them in a bad way. If anything, it was just by, you know, their willingness to participate or even share their stories and their lives with everybody, that wasn't an effort to help people understand, maybe learn from their experience. And so I would want people to take away something positive and not have negative feelings about anybody that's either mentioned or participating. And then in terms of tribal courts, I think if just really encouragement to tribal courts, individuals participating, tribal leaders, tribal judges, to continue to push forward, you know, in your development of your courts, and to try to also reach out and collaborate with our state counterparts and the state courts and providers to help build relationships. We've seen a lot of success with the building of relationships and understanding and education, so I would just encourage you all to do the same.
Great. Thanks for that. And Judge Abbey, we got about a minute. Go ahead.
I would just say that I'm going to pretend like everything that Judge White said, I said, because she said it really well.
Indeed.
So I'm going to weigh in on that. And I would also say to young people and people in community, get involved in your courts. You have things to contribute, and we need your help, and we would appreciate it. All right.
Thank you for that. And ladies, I also want to just celebrate. It's so exciting to hear two women judges talking about this, and definitely the words you've shared today. So thank you for that. And folks, that's going to wrap it up for our hour. Thanks again to our filmmaker and Make Peace, Chief Judge Abby Abinati, and also Chief Judge Claudette White. We are back again tomorrow with a show about missing children. And if there's anything you want to share on that or you want more details, visit our website, nativeamericacalling.com. And thanks to the Native America Calling crew, our executive producer, Art Hughes, senior producer, Monica Brain, associate producer, Andy Murphy, and also thanks to Roman Garcia for engineering today's show. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. And if you want more information about shows we have planned, visit our website or even sign up for our newsletter, then everything will be sent to your inbox. And if there's more you still want to say about what you heard today, reach out to us, send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE, or find us on Facebook or Instagram. Thanks again, and we're back tomorrow.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, providing mini grants for obesity prevention, improved nutrition, and physical activity. Deadline is August 23rd. More at www.aaip.org. Support by the Sioux Trading Post, proud to provide traditional and contemporary American Indian craft supplies, from feathers, furs, and hides to conchos, fringe, shells, and beads, all available at SiouxTrading.com. Wopila.
Keshe, yamisto medical cause alite natu. Lukia olo ikan a yamato that to medicate that to cheap an artisan natu. 1-800-318-2596 and penan argument. That is medicate.gov in Donawa doa. Lukia Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services don't know a penan itu lokanawe. Ela qua.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.